RC Davis with another edition of Warriors Sound on the latest Warriors Radio Roundtable. Tim Roy spoke with Associate Head Coach Mike Brown about the end-of-season in-game tournament, as well as discussing, could Steph Curry really be underrated? Take a listen.
Well, Mike, first off, the most important thing, I hope you and your boys and all those you hold dear are healthy and happy these days.
Yes, you know, Tim, I tell you what, my oldest son is playing professionally, playing professional basketball in Spain, and so he's up in northern Spain right now, and he's healthy and happy, and they're in the playoff hunt. And my youngest boy, Cameron, he played football at the D3 level, and you know, he's been out for a year because the only football going on was in the NFL, and so he just about a week and a half ago, he signed his first official contract. He's playing to play football in Austria. So
wow.
He's playing American football in Austria. And, you know, when we were on the flight last night, flying from the Bay to Miami, the flight was forever. And I was about to complain, but then I thought back on my son's journey from, he was living in Cleveland, to Austria, to the small town in Austria where his team is based. He flew on Sunday, he flew from Cleveland, Ohio to Chicago, Illinois, had a 4.5-hour layover there, flew from Chicago to Turkey, had a 16.5-hour layover in Turkey, flew from Turkey to Vienna, Austria, and then he had a 7-hour train ride. He literally just got to his destination. So I kept telling myself, hey, Mike, don't feel bad. You're on a nice charter. You got plenty of room, plenty of food, around good people, and it's only 5 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, we all have first world problems, I think. But,
yes.
You know, I mean, really. Think about that. Think about how the Brown family, you guys are world travelers. You got a son in Spain, son in Austria. You're head coach of the Nigerian national team. You guys are all over the globe.
we're trying to touch as many countries as we can in our lifetime. So, no, what a fantastic experience for both my kids, and then, you know, like you said, for myself too. I'm extremely excited to be a part of the Nigerian national team. Looking forward to the upcoming Olympics this summer, and hopefully be able to get out of pool play. No African country has been out of pool play before in the Olympics, so hopefully we can get that done this time around.
Talking with Mike Brown, Warriors Associate Head Coach, Warriors and Heat tomorrow right here on 95.7 The Game, your home for Golden State Warriors basketball. Coach, the other night it was painfully evident that, you know, Stephen Curry just makes all the difference in the world. Is it possible that he's underrated as a player?
For sure. And I've been around the game almost 30 years at the NBA level, and you know, people look at him more so when, you know, looking at his stature, and you know, he's not obviously a physically imposing person when it comes to NBA basketball, because more than 95% of the league is probably bigger than him. But his skill set, his feel, his intelligence, you know, his uncanny ability to find cracks and holes within the defense to get to his shot are something that he makes it look so easy that sometimes it can go unappreciated to a certain degree. You know, everybody looks at him, you know, a lot of people look at him and think, okay, if I spend an extra hour every day shooting, I can be the next Steph Curry, which they probably can, you know, if they work at it. I'm not saying you can't, you know, shoot for the stars, but you know, he does more things than what people really give him credit for, and it's a lot harder than the way he makes it look, you know. And so therefore, you know, whether it's the media, the fans, or whoever, at times he can be undervalued because of it, you know, because people think, oh, all he does is shoot, when he brings so much more to the table. Even a leadership quality that goes unnoticed at times, because he's such a, I don't know if quiet's the right word, but he's such such a calm presence that is not extremely vocal all the time.
You know, Mike, it's interesting that you talk about not being vocal. You know, James Wiseman turns 20 today. He's 20 years old now, no longer a teenager. But, you know, he's so young in the league, and you know, he someday I know he'll be a vocal player, but he's probably not right now. What do you see with Wiseman? He gets a lot of discussion on talk shows, on social media. What do you see, and what would you tell fans, you know, to expect and to hope for in the years to come?
The ironic part about it is he's shown flashes of being vocal, just like he's shown flashes of being able to take the ball off the defensive glass and go coast to coast and finish with a dunk after going behind the back and between the legs in traffic. You know, so his abilities are there, and we all have seen flashes of it. Even like I said, the ones that don't stand out on TV, which is talking behind the defense. The tough part about it, everybody in the day of social media, they want things to happen yesterday. And when you're 19 and you played three or four college games, and before that you played high school games that you're able to dominate just by walking onto the floor, it takes a little bit of time because the speed of the game and the strength of the individuals that he's playing against, as well as their quickness and their intelligence and the intricacies of the game that make it the highest level that you could possibly play on in the world, are, you know, something that's tough to get used to. And so being young and being thrown into the mix right now causes him to think at times, because he's not used to being in those situations. And if you're thinking out on the floor in an NBA game, the moment has passed you. And so, you know, that's why you don't see him talking all the time. That's why you don't see him, you know, that's why you see him at times missing assignments, or whether it's offensively or defensively, or doing things that you think that, doing things a half a step late that you think that he should have done, you know, two or three seconds before it actually occurred. And but all those things, after being in it for a while and understanding the pace and seeing the different pictures and feeling against what it's like playing against different teams and players, it's all going to come to the forefront. I don't know if there's anything that he, as a true seven-footer, that he won't be able to do. He's going to be able to shoot threes at a consistent level. He's going to be able to shoot a pull-up. He's going to be able to take guys off the dribble. He's going to be able to post guys up. He obviously is going to be a vertical threat. He's going to be able to bring the ball coast to coast in transition and make a play. He's going to be able to run the floor and get dunks or lobs in transition. He's going to be a fantastic shot blocker. He's going to be able to switch on to point guards. I mean, I could go on and on and on. He's going to be able to eventually do all those things, I think, at a high level. But more importantly, at a consistent level that will make him an all-star many times over.
That's Mike Brown, Warriors associate head coach. And, Mike, we're heading into a stretch of games in the season where, you know, it's really kind of interesting. The play-in scenario, I think, has changed everything. There's going to be so many big games between now and the end of the regular season. And Steve Kerr had said recently that he felt the team was poised to make a run. Can that run start soon? Do you think the Warriors are close to gelling and getting that run started?
I think so, Timmy. You know, I thought our game against Chicago was, and yes, we did get Steph back, but we did some things that were real solid on both sides of the ball, and we did them throughout most of the game. It wasn't like we did them in spurts. We were pretty consistent in our effort level on both sides of the ball, but just as importantly, our focus on what our job is. And you know, we've had some pretty good practices as of late, our guys have responded well to what we're throwing at them. So I think our guys understand what part or what time of the year we're in right now. And if there is a time to trend upwards in your play, it is right now going into the playoffs.
And would a playoff series pay benefits. We know what Clay can do and what Steph can do, what Draymond can do, Kevon Looney in big situations. We've seen them excel in years gone by. But would a playoff experience, how much benefit would that be for Wiseman, for Poole, for Pascal, for Mannion, for all these players that may play roles for the Warriors in years to come?
It'd be huge because, you know, the playoff atmosphere, not only in your preparation, but the actual game and the things that come with the actual games during the playoffs, it's at a whole nother level. And so for our guys to get a feel of it, a taste of it, this year would only benefit them. And obviously, if it's benefiting them, it's benefit the organization and the city for many years to come. So for sure, our goal is to position ourselves to be in the playoffs. But more importantly, when you're there, anything can happen. And, you know, if we continue to trend upward, especially during this time of the year, going on a playoff run can happen to anybody at any given time. So our goal, obviously, is to get there while we're trending upwards during this time of the year.
We also spoke with Tim Bontemps of ESPN, and he gave us his winners and losers at the NBA trade deadline.
Well, Tim, first of all, thanks for joining us, and we hope that everybody that you love and hold dear are healthy and reasonably happy as we try to get to the end of this pandemic.
Same to you, man. Great to catch up with you. It's been a minute since I've gotten to see you, and like we were talking about before we started, I can't wait till I can get to see you and everybody else in the league again. It's one of the things I miss the most during all this is the inability to go around the country and see people. So I look forward to when we can do that again in person.
Absolutely. So we're a week past the deadline. Who are your winners and losers coming out of that?
Well, I really think, Tim, that the Denver Nuggets just had a massive win at the trade deadline. Getting Aaron Gordon, who I think is a better player than Jeremy Grant, the guy that they lost in free agency in November when he signed a deal with the Detroit Pistons. I really think Gordon is a perfect fit for the way that that Denver likes to play. He's a big physical forward who can guard either forward spot. He's a really good pairing with Michael Porter Jr., who, you know, as your listeners know, is a big-time scorer and is a pretty big-time defender in the sense that he lets the guys he's guarding score a lot also. So they can hide him a bit with Aaron Gordon there, and they have a guy now they can throw on the likes of LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard, at least be able to physically hold up against those guys in a way that Jeremy Grant, you know, he's a good defender, but he's a pretty thin, you know, guy, and it was not really capable of holding up in those matchups. I think Aaron Gordon is, and you've seen in the early games that they've played with Gordon in the lineup. You know, I was watching the Sixers-Nuggets game last night, and his ability to cut off the ball and move on the break, I think, is really going to be unlocked with that team. You know, they play up-tempo. They've got probably the best passing big ever in Nikola Jokic. Jamal Murray is a very dynamic player with the ball in his hands. So I really like that fit a lot. And in when you look at the West and you see how all these teams at the top didn't do a whole lot, the fact that that Denver was able to add a piece like Aaron Gordon and not give up any part of their rotation, I think it was a huge move for them and really gives them a shot to be a real factor here in the Western Conference playoffs.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You look at the standings right now, and I'm holding out judgment on the play-in tournament just to see what it you know how it goes and what it's like.
Yeah.
But I will say this. There's going to be about now six or seven teams that are, and the Warriors are one of them. They're going to have some real monster games coming up as we head down the stretch. Because every time you play a team, you know, from roughly 7 to 12, those are big games.
Yep.
They're like two game swings. So I think it's going to make some of the regular season more exciting.
I really agree, Tam, and I'm pretty excited for this last couple months. You know, you look at the Eastern Conference, right? And from basically 4th through 12th, it's like, I think, a five-game spread, right? So you could go from having home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs to missing the playoffs with a bad couple of weeks.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And it's sort of the same thing to your point in the West where, you know, you've got the Lakers who are really falling down the standings really fast without LeBron James and Anthony Davis and probably will keep falling, and they could end up in the play-in game, which would be pretty fascinating. And then you've got, you know, you've got Zion Williamson and the Pelicans sitting there on the outside looking in. You've got the Kings, you know, down I-80 from San Francisco, you know, playing really well right now with De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton trying to make a push to make the playoffs. You got the Warriors with, you know, obviously Steph finally back playing again after that scary fall and hurting his tailbone is nice. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how this shakes out. And I think, you know, the league, I think between the combination of flattening the lottery odds and kind of limiting the reasons to try to tank and adding this play-in game and giving teams another incentive to try to make the playoffs, I think you're right. I think it's really going to lead to a much more interesting final couple months of the regular season. And, you know, there's going to be two or three games a night, if not more, that are going to have real implications for what's going on. And I'm excited to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. And, I think it's going to make for some really big games that otherwise wouldn't have much of a meaning in years gone by. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. You know, you talk about the standings, and I wanted to get your thought on a couple of teams in the East. Atlanta seems to have turned their season around. They're healthier now. Nate McMillan's been hired. But do you think Boston and Atlanta are kind of like, and Miami for that fact, if you look at 6, 7, and 8 in the East, are those teams really 6, 7, and 8, or are they better than what they have shown so far?
It's a great question, Tim, and I wish I knew, right? Like, I live in Boston, and I'm around the Celtics all the time, and they're a pretty confounding team. You know, they've had a rough season. I think they've had the most games missed due to COVID for any team. They've had a bunch of injuries. Marcus Smart missed 6 weeks. Kemba Walker missed the first month and had to ramp up after an offseason, knee strengthening program after his knee bothered him basically for all of 2020. But they have just not looked like themselves all year. And even though they added Evan Fournier, who I think is a nice pickup, they had to lose Daniel Tice to get out of the luxury tax. And I just am not sure how high up the standings they're going to get or if they're going to be able to realize their potential. Of the teams you mentioned, I have the highest hopes for Miami in terms of being a threat. I liked what they did at the deadline. I don't think Victor Oladipo has much left at this point. But getting him for free, which they basically did, it's certainly worth taking a swing and seeing if he can kind of rediscover the form he had a couple years ago in Indiana. And I like the moves of getting Trevor Ariza to Manya Bialica for, again, basically nothing. I mean, they added two or three guys without really giving up any of their core pieces. And we saw last year in the bubble, you know, the Heat in the playoffs with Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic and the depth and experience they have around those guys. I think they've got a chance. And you know, Atlanta's interesting. I think, you know, Travis Schlenk, the GM there, obviously longtime Warriors guy, I think has done a nice job kind of setting a foundation there with Trae Young. I am a little concerned about their ability to really be a factor in the playoffs at this point. Their defense is still terrible, and we haven't seen Trae go up against a high-level defense in a playoff series. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, look, Atlanta came into the season hoping to be one of the eight teams in the playoffs in the East, and if they could get anywhere, certainly in the top six and avoid the play-in, but even get into the play-in and make the playoffs, I think they'll be happy no matter what the outcome is at that point, and they'll see that as a successful season.
Tim Bontemps, our guest here on the Warriors Roundtable. I am Tim Roy, and you can follow Tim at Tim Bontemps, of course, writing for ESPN and covering the East this year, the Celtics and the NBA and all things basketball. But so with that in mind, I'm going to flip it over to – I want to ask about one particular player and because I'm curious to see – how you view him. And the Phoenix Suns are going great, and we all know, you know, about Chris Paul coming in, getting things organized there, getting everybody lined up in the right spot. But to me, Jay Crowder always seems to find a place on a good team. He just seems to be a pretty good glue guy. And in talking to the people that cover the Heat this year, that they said that's the guy that they miss from a year ago. What's your view on Jay Crowder, and why is he a good glue guy?
Well, you're 1,000% right on all those points, Tim. And it's not even that Jay Crowder is that good of a player, because he's a fine player, right? It's more that in today's NBA, what is everybody trying to find? They're trying to find combo forwards that can shoot threes and guard people, right? If you're a 6'7", 6'8", strong physical guy who can guard, you know, the bigger wing players, can play at either forward spot and can credibly shoot from three-point range, that's a hugely valuable player. And that's Jay Crowder, right? That's his skill set. He can't really dribble. He can't really pass. But he is going to guard people, and he can reliably hit some threes. And when he got in the lineup for the Miami Heat in the bubble, that was what made that team click. He popped in there at power forward. That allowed Bam Adebayo to shift to center, and they could have four smalls around Bam, and he shot, I think, 5 billion% from three through the first three rounds of the playoffs and was exactly the reason why they made the NBA Finals. And has, you know, the Heat traded for Trevor Ariza, hoping he can replicate some of what Jay Crowder brought to them, because they have not been able to find anything close to him all season. They tried Mo Harkless. That didn't work. They tried a bunch of different things. They tried Jimmy Butler at power forward some to try to give him some of the same thing. But look, he has been great in Phoenix. I know the numbers with him on the court haven't been great. I think some of that is just due to some shooting luck. When they get in the playoffs and they're rolling out there with Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, and Jay Crowder, that's a team that is, I think, got a chance to make a lot of noise in the West. And, you know, I think has a chance to really beat anybody, because they've got that's a twosome at the 3-4 spots that can guard any combination in the league. And I think, like I said, I think it gives Phoenix a real puncher's chance to be a huge factor in the West.
Tim, before I let you go, let's have a little fun here. Give me your top three favorite people to interview in your NBA career and why.
That's a great question. I've really gotten to know Kyle Lowry very well in Toronto, so I would say him for starters. Kyle is a pretty fascinating dude. Obviously, he's had a pretty interesting career, kind of winding through, going on to win the title. I'll be a bit of a homer being on your podcast. Steph Curry is one of the best guys in the league and is a really good, solid guy. Also an A-10 guy now, even though he wasn't when he was in college. I'm a proud St. Bonaventure graduate. He went to Davidson, which is now in the A-10. So, enjoy talking to him about that when I see him. And who is another one? Let's see. This is a little bit farther back, but the other one I would say is Dirk Nowitzki for me. I got a chance to spend a good amount of time with Dirk. His final year, I think I talked to him for probably an hour in San Francisco. He's just such a rock solid human being, just a really nice, decent guy, and obviously had an incredible career. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch I could choose from, but those are three guys that immediately come to mind.
Yeah. I've been lucky. I've been spoiled. I mean, I got Steve Kerr as a head coach, you know, and he's fascinating to talk to and very insightful, thoughtful. And one of my first coaches I had to deal with, I was on one of the Kings broadcasters, was Dick Motta, and he had a story for everything.
Yeah.
He had a story.
Yeah.
I asked him, we asked him one day about the national anthem. He gave us like a 55-second soundbite. It was unbelievable.
He is pretty good. And look, I mean, even the guys with Steph, I mean, you know, Klay Thompson, I had an hour lunch with Klay Thompson back in 2015 during Q&A. That was probably the funniest interview I've ever done with anybody. Draymond is great. I mean, we're fortunate, right?
Yeah.
Like in the NBA, there's so many, the guys are good guys and they're just such fascinating people. You know, I've said this for years, you know, basketball is a sport that's about individualism and creativity at its core. Right. And that just breeds interesting people. You know, when you're playing football or hockey or even baseball to an extent, it's kind of a like bigger, you know, all about the team. Everything's about the team, kind of put yourself before the team, et cetera. And it kind of makes everybody kind of fit into a box. And the beauty about covering basketball is that not that guys aren't, you know, all for trying to win games and playing for each other and stuff, because they are, but it's a sport that kind of by necessity drives creativity and individualism when you're out on the court, because, you know, it's just kind of the way the game is played. And I think it really creates interesting people, and it brings people from all over the world together, which leads to a lot of interesting stuff too. So, you know, we're really fortunate, I think, to get to cover a sport where you get to talk to interesting people every day. And like we said at the beginning, hopefully the day comes back soon where, you know, we can say hello to each other on the court and actually talk to people in person again. Won't that be nice? That
would be great. I look forward to it. And Tim, I always appreciate your time. And stay safe and keep the writing the good stuff. It's at ESPN, Tim Bontemps. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Tim. Thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Warriors Sound.